All right. Hey, I'm Josh Crane. I'm the lead pastor of Verve City Church. I'm here with two other staff members today. I'm going to have them introduce themselves real fast, starting to my right.
Hi, I'm Jen. I'm the children's pastor.
Hey, I am Audrey Eisenberg, and I serve as executive pastor.
So today we are talking about At the Movies, our series that we just started this last Sunday. And each week we're going to release one of these podcasts where we talk about the movie a little bit. And then we talk about some of the biblical points, Jesus points that were made in the movie a little bit. But before we get there, ka-chow, we're talking about cars today.
We could boast about developing the world's most technologically advanced automobiles. Or brag about the fact that we've received more awards than any other manufacturer. We could gloat, tease, and flaunt all day. But we don't need to. Because our cars speak for themselves.
I'm telling you, man, every third blink is slower.
The 60s weren't good to you, were they?
From the manufacturers of Finding Nemo and The Incredibles, Walt Disney Pictures presents a Pixar Animation Studios film, Cars.
I have followed the racing my entire life, my whole life!
Then you know who I am.
Do you know many Ferraris?
No. They race on the European circuit. What?
Luigi follow only the Ferraris.
Okay, so Cars, movie by Pixar Studios. I just want to read off real fast. These are the movies leading up to Cars, their release, okay? It's like, they come out with Toy Story, 1995, $244 million, solid. Bug's Life after that, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, that one takes in $871 million by that point. The Incredibles is $631 million. And so up until Finding Nemo, it was all up and to the right. And then Incredibles, slight dip, not as popular a movie in foreign markets, I think. And then Cars comes out, $461 million.
Ouch.
Like, yeah. That being said, though, that's an incredible run.
Yeah, yes. That's Pixar.
It really is. And they released, obviously, some notable films after that. But that run, is that the greatest run of animated cartoons in our lifetime? The oldest person here being Audrey, of course.
The oldest person, yeah. So we could rival that maybe with the Disney run of the, I don't know, my childhood somewhere right. in the 90s. Like, okay, so we had The Little Mermaid and we had Aladdin and we had
Lion King,
right? Yeah,
I think of those as like the real cartoons.
Yeah, that's right, the classics, like the OG good cartoons.
Right, like somebody drew them, right? Like,
I mean, I don't know.
They look more like they were drawn, not like a computer
hand drawn.
Like,
you mean?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Exactly.
Like, yeah. I do feel like our computer animation experts would be very offended that you don't give them credit for.
Sure.
Yeah.
I get that.
Are these movies going to be as memorable to the 7 and 8 year olds who saw them when they were kids as the OG Disney ones are to the people around this table? Is this, they're going to look back on these the same way?
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
As a mom of a kid who just went to college with a Lightning McQueen pillow on his bed, I'm going to go with, yeah, they kind of love these movies. So the Cars movie was a staple in our house for years. And literally, it's one of Andrew's favorites to this day. So, yeah, I think it really hits a place of like, ooh, that childhood heart. But it's grown with him for however many years at this point. So, yeah.
And, hey, I got to give props to The Incredibles. I actually really love The Incredibles. So
that's a good movie.
I mean, it didn't do as well as some of the others, but fantastic. And okay. I actually remember things of it.
All right. Biggest difference I see between these and the OG Disney ones.
Sure.
Not a lot of music in these.
I was going to say, it's the music. It's that whole Alan Menken brilliance, right?
Right, like, right. So, I mean, there is, you know, the Toy Story, You Got a Friend of Me thing, but they're not musicals.
It's not the same.
And all those that you mentioned earlier, they're all musicals, right?
Absolutely.
And I just wonder how much the music makes it stick with you, like, a long time afterwards.
Well, but then even if we look at, like, the sort of controversy or popularity, depending on the side of it you're on, right? The Little Mermaid comeback? Like, was it a comeback? Or was
By the way, I just found out last week that they're doing live-action Moana now. And that movie came out, like, 6 minutes ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Very recent.
I don't know.
Disney. So is it like the let's refresh musicals by putting real people in them and then it'll be better? I mean, we tried that back in the 30s and 40s. I don't know. Like,
we just don't want to think of new movies.
Right.
So,
that's true. There's no new stories.
Yeah,
how could we possibly?
Well, they just keep making, I mean, they're printing money with them. So I get why. Yeah. You're back to, I mean, The Little Mermaid, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Did that do well? That did okay, right?
It did okay.
Did pretty well.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. So this is an incredible run. Cars ends up bottoming. I mean, this is the lowest grossing movie until they get to The Good Dinosaur.
Mm, who watched that?
Yeah, right?
I liked The Good Dinosaur.
Really?
Yeah. And then Cars 3 is the was a little more than that. But then they made, and I mentioned this Sunday, but they made, in the 5 years after this movie's released, $10 billion in toys and merchandise around Cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
We owned a lot of those cars in my house.
Contributed maybe a billion to that or something?
And the Crocs. And the gear.
And the Crocs. And the,
yeah.
What all did, do you remember, what all did you own? What all toys did you buy from the?
Oh, well, so like all of the little cars, like the, we had Matchbox cars in our house. And then
like
we had
Hot Wheels style cars,
right,
like that size?
So in our house, we had Hot Wheels, like regular Hot Wheels. And then we had a whole set of the Cars characters. And so when we were picking up around our house, we would talk about picking up the cars. Cause like they were the Cars character cars, not just the Matchbox cars. Yeah, we had tons of that. We had a lunchbox at one point. I'm quite sure there was a backpack that was part of our existence that was a Cars thing at some point. Oh, my kids, my boys slept in Cars beds. You like the little, like the Fisher Price, like toddler beds, like Cars themed beds. We had a, we had a McQueen. So yeah, Cars merchandise,
wow,
man.
You guys really did go all out. Okay, so a little bit of internet research on the movie that I found interesting. This is Paul Newman's highest grossing film. That feels like an injustice in the world to me. That the highest grossing film. And also, I think the last one he did before he retired.
Sorry, Paul Newman.
Yeah, I am too.
You're welcome. I don't know.
No, there's no, you're welcome over this. No, that's not a thing. So I, yeah. Anyway, Cool Hand Luke. What a way to go out. So, other things. Cars 2, the sequel, did a little bit better than the first one. Third one did worse than the other two. There's only one person at this table that saw the sequel, and that was Audrey.
Yeah. I mean, it's not memorable, really, is where I would end on it, right? Like, the Cars 3 movie was the one, I said, like, it's the one with the girl car, right? Like, somehow we had to come full circle and be like, oh, there's a female race car who's cool too, and I'm all about girls doing all the things, but it just, that wasn't that didn't stick quite as well.
It was a reach.
Yeah, it felt a little. All right, can I say a controversial thing though?
Yeah, hot take. Give me your hot take.
Is it also maybe that like my boy children are really excited about playing with cars, whereas my girl children were more excited about playing with frozen princesses than they were with a female car?
It could be.
Maybe.
As a male, I have no opinion on such.
Just saying.
I will say that my youngest had like trucks.
Yeah.
Like little trucks.
Sure.
That she'd stolen from grandparents' houses or whatever.
Totally,
that
yeah.
like went with her everywhere.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, more like is it missed by Pixar? Like, oh, we'll make a girl's car movie and that will really help us. But does it really?
It was the wrong target for the wrong thing.
Not maybe. As the sweet spot as.
Okay. So you had a hot take as well on the
I
Cars
do.
Movie. What,
okay.
what do you got?
My hot take was that Lightning McQueen is an ageist.
Okay.
Let me. Here's my reasoning.
Is that a hot take or is that just objectively true?
I got three reasons. Yeah. So I'm going to convince you all that Lightning McQueen is an ageist.
Won't
and that
much.
If this movie came out now and not in 2006, ooh. Then maybe they would have not gone this way.
There
I'm
you
just
go.
Saying.
Okay.
The very beginning, right, he is real negative about the king who's like old and washed up and
that's
has been. He's trying
totally.
To retire, right?
Yeah.
So real negative there.
Okay.
Okay, Doc Hudson, again, he sees him as somebody that he can't possibly understand what a cool young race car like needs in life or whatever, right? And then he says to Mater at one point, no more rusty old cars for me. And Mater's like, what's wrong with rusty old cars? Not you,
not you
but like
either.
The other rusty old cars, right? He's like backtracking. So he's an ageist, that's what I have to say.
Well, he's real down on his sponsor, which it's the Rusties, right?
Sure.
That tends to sponsor. What would be like a human equivalent to this?
Whoever
adult diapers?
Like,
I'm just trying to.
Sure.
Like,
replacement
like if
hips? I don't know.
Replacement hips? No, that might work. Yeah, sure,
dentures?
Sure. Yeah, I can't name you a single replacement hip company. So, yeah, they're not doing great with their marketing.
Sensodyne.
Well, you know.
Sensodyne?
Dentures,
okay.
Right?
I can
that's
go, yeah, dentures,
think?
Sure.
Yeah,
okay, Sensodyne. So, yeah, so it's not. He's not super. His audience is not. He's not the cool kid because he's aged.
Right,
I think
yeah,
that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I can go with that. But my hot take. I don't think this is a good movie. And so we picked it because a lot of people love it, and then I have to like live with it for a while to,
sure.
as I'm making a message around it. I feel like it's all over the place theme wise. So we picked out one theme, which is ego, but there's ageism, there's sexism. The way he treats the Porsche
totally.
Car in the courtroom is like almost hard to watch now.
Absolutely.
It's cringy.
Yeah. Just stand there and let me look at you.
Yeah.
That is, wow.
I don't so I'm torn between, is that just not aged well, or are they intentionally showing us like just how completely terrible he is in every sense? Maybe both, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know that scene makes it if that movie's made today. There's also the themes of like passing by a small town that, you know, in order to save 10 minutes. So this kind of old school nostalgia for what was, that's a theme. In fact, Roger Ebert's review, who gave it 3 out of 4, by the way, Roger's my guy. I love Roger Ebert.
Okay.
He's a great writer. He gave this though 3 out of 4 stars.
Yeah.
Huge miss by the Raj, I think. That's, well, I would, 1.5, 2 stars of Rada Gamba. He says the theme is the small town thing, which is in there, but it's just, it's so, right. And then maybe friends or depending on other people, just feels thematically all over the place to me.
Right.
So I don't love that. And then you know, a little Larry the Cable Guy goes a long way for me, personally.
I don't know who Larry the Cable Guy is.
Are you? It's the guy who voices Mater.
Right. Great. It's that like country bumpkin.
So you're saying you got too much of that.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
This is a culture box problem.
This is a culture box problem. I can't believe you don't. Do you know who Larry is, or is this a totally new thing?
Vaguely. Like I can picture a guy with no sleeves, right? Like,
yeah. Okay. All right. So.
Wait. This is the guy that says, "I don't care who you are. That's funny, right?
That and that's that guy? Get her done. Okay. Yeah. Those are the two things he says all
the
time. Okay.
I'm in the loop.
I grew up in Texas, right? So these guys in the blue collar comedy tour was like a huge thing when I was in college.
Sure.
And then Mater ends up being cast as little goes a long way. Whenever we take our kids to Disneyland, I hear Larry the Cable Guy talking, you know, and it's like doesn't make my day better. I don't know. One last little thing, section about the movie, and then we'll jump into some other things. I like unanswerable questions when it comes to movies. I think those are interesting to consider. So how is Radiator Springs still around at all? Like they don't get any cars that drive through? There's a whole economy based on what? Everyone buying gas at Flo's? Is that?
Yeah, because apparently if Flo's goes out of business, I mean, they got nothing.
I mean, how often is Luigi selling tires to these like 9 cars?
Well, this is my question too. Is like if Flo says, okay, if I don't sell gas, I got to move.
Right.
Where are you going to move to?
Where are you moving to? Yeah.
I mean, obviously y'all all run on gas.
Right.
So just, you know.
But I mean, if we go with your guy, Roger, right? And like the whole idea of this being a small town, just take it for what it is, which is, okay, lots of small towns. I've driven through when we've driven out, you know, and you drive through and you're like, really, like who lives here? How do these kids all go to school? And do they go to school with the same kids and teachers for like all 12 years? Or like, I mean, there are truly small towns that maybe aren't our actual lived experience. True. But I mean, having road tripped a little bit, I think there's a symbolism to this Radiator Springs town that like you can get behind how that works.
That symbolism is a cop out on this one. It's an unanswerable question. I want to know if they're living like in a commune style, like we're all just gonna like
but how are we give supporting you gas. The infrastructure
yeah.
Here.
And where did they learn to talk? I mean,
where did they learn to talk? Also, Doc,
why,
you know, though? Doc gets up to the starting line. Like you don't hear their engines usually, but when Doc races, his engine comes on, and it's like,
sure.
Do you only need the engine on at certain times? Also, there's no in any of these movies. You've seen 3 of them. There's no children cars.
There's no baby cars. I've never seen a baby car.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
They're aging apparently.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, the cars watching the other race cars racing.
But there's also no death, right?
No, hold on.
Yeah. I don't know, is there?
In the cars watching the race car in the very beginning of the movie,
yeah.
There are these two like twinsy little dressed like Lightning McQueen cars
that's
in
true.
The audience.
That's true. They are small, aren't they?
It's literally the only kid cars that you see the whole time, but there are two. Huh.
So I would like a documentary about the world of cars to see how this works, I think would be great. And these are unanswerable questions. And I know you're thinking, Josh, I think you're overthinking it. And like, yeah, that's the point of a podcast. So let's jump into some of what we talked about then this last week around this movie, because ego ends up being one of the themes. That's the one that we picked and talking about. We talked about ego being painful and busy and fragile. And just a quick recap, painful just being that, you know, it hurts to feel undervalued or unseen or misunderstood. Busy that our ego's always at work. We're always wondering how others see us, hoping that we'll come off looking well. We need constant affirmation. And then fragile, just that, like no matter how puffed up we are, it does not take much to deflate us. So just around this topic of ego, where have you seen these things be true in your own life? Or feel free to throw your spouses under the bus or anybody else you want to.
So as somebody who is wired as like an achiever, like I love setting goals. I love going after goals. I do that almost without thinking. Like it's kind of just, I feel like I'm lost and drifting if I don't have goals that are anchoring me towards something, whether that's personally, professionally, whatever, right? Like, and I think that goes, I can think back to like, even when I was in high school and I was pursuing things I was really interested in, like I wasn't just doing stuff because it was fun. I was doing stuff with a lot of purpose. Like I did stuff I enjoyed, but I was aspiring toward leadership, or I was trying to be better at a particular thing, like a musical skill or whatever that I was learning, right? So like I've always been wired toward that. So I think for me, the temptation to be wrapped up in ego constantly, right? Because our society fuels that, right? So there's a societal, like, whatever your personal wiring or drive toward a passion or an interest that can be a really good thing is, I think one of the things that's always been a challenge for me as I look back is, like, how do I not let that be totally convoluted by the comparison or the temptation to be striving towards something for reasons that aren't entirely, like, purposeful or pure, but become more wrapped up in some of these other things, the busyness or my own fragility, comparison, whatever, right? Like, it's really easy to go from a point of, oh my gosh, I'm passionate and I'm excited and I'm eager and I'm pursuing it for these things, to all of a sudden the reason, the why behind why I'm pursuing something to be slipping away from me and slipping in a direction where, like, ego in a negative sense is fueling that as opposed to a positive.
Especially if you're doing well at something,
totally,
you're getting praise
yeah.
from people, right? And then that can start to feel good, and right. then that's an easy distraction.
Yeah, and we thrive on praise and encouragement, right? And I think there's a lot of validity to that, like being encouraged or having somebody see in you a gifting or a skill or something, right? Like, that can be really rewarding and even, like, inspirational. But yeah, how do we make sure that that's not tipping into a direction of more unhealth than healthiness?
The comparison thing is a big one for me, in that I've noticed in myself, I can be thinking things are going really well for me or for our church or for whatever. And then I'll see a social media post where, well, yeah, but it's going a little better for that guy over there. And then it's like, oh, you end up benchmarking yourself, right, compared to other people.
Yeah.
And even in friendships. So I've experienced this personally. I've also just seen it a lot just in pastoring people. But last church I was on staff at, there were two friends that stopped being friends. What happened was, one had been the more successful friend for, like, the 20 years of their friendship, and then that flipped. The other one sold a business and got a lot of money, and, like, their friendship couldn't handle the changing dynamic.
Totally.
That the one is now more, you know, quote-unquote successful than the other,
yeah,
has more money than the other. No. Now, the one who got more money was fine with it.
I know.
Sure. Yeah, right. It was, yeah, the other guy that was wrestling
transition
with it. Yeah. And it was just, I don't know, it messed with it literally, because that dynamic flipped, it actually messed with the self-conception of the one person who before this, I don't think would have been able to know that it was important to him,
right,
that he was a little ahead of his friend.
Sure. Yeah.
But
and it
after,
feels gross when you, like, recognize that, right? Because right.
Yeah.
It's the friendship day, and then you're like, oh my gosh, now I'm judging myself over that, which probably is right. But also, like, I didn't even know I was thinking that. It feels like what he might've been thinking, right?
Yep.
Like,
yeah,
that's really,
totally.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm a very social person. But I understand, like, I've experienced when I'm getting to know new people, I feel very much of conflict of, like, what can I share with them? Because without fear of them judging me based on, you know, this is not something they maybe agree with or whatever, or, like, are they going to think I'm too weird or too whatever?
Yeah.
So that's the piece of
and
the
you're
ego.
You're not even in junior high anymore, and you have
right?
these concerns. You're,
no,
yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
And I'll be like, you know, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut about this because I'm not really sure what they'll think of me if I say, you know, if I'm really open about it.
I, for one, really appreciate that you very slowly introduce yourself to me so that, you know, I could handle it.
Exactly.
It's very mindful of you.
You
really
stick your toe in the water and make sure it's all safe, and then I'll just let it all hang out.
Have you guys found a barrier when you, like, maybe you go to dinner with someone who's just in a really different stratosphere one way or the other? Like,
I don't go to dinner with those people.
I found myself both, like, I've been at dinners with people who, you know, are worth way more money than I'll ever see. And I've been at dinners with people who are really struggling.
Yeah.
Where we're not struggling in the same way. And I'm always aware of the dynamic with whichever side I'm on.
Yeah.
And the one I'm trying to be careful not to.
You know what I think, though, breaks that down is, like, is relationship. And I think that's one of the things that, like, I think that's one of the things God does in our lives, right? Is, like, is the people in our lives or the circumstances, like, it depends. I mean, the context matters a ton, right? But when you talk about being in situations with people that are, you know, have net worth of whatever, I used to do fundraising for organizations, nonprofits, and lived and worked in Chicago for a long time and have certainly been in rooms with great wealth that far exceeds wealth that my family and I will never experience, right? But understanding motivations of those people, the philanthropic people who were, yes, of great means, but also trying to make a great difference. Like, that was a really cool place to kind of be in, that spot of relational and seeing people be relatable in ways that I might not have expected. The flip side is also true. One of the nonprofits I worked for, I had the privilege to travel to rural Malawi for weeks at a time and literally sit in huts and villages that were entirely different from my experience and much more impoverished than anything I've ever experienced, right? And yet looking at people who had great joy because of an opportunity or because of something that was going well in their community or whatever, and just being aware that I think our own stuff mattered a lot less than in either of those situations, the fact that we were willing to be in relationship. There was some sort of commonality that we shared despite a whole lot of other things about our own particular situations that could have been comparably quite different. It wasn't about the comparison, it was about the relationship.
Well, and I think that's what Paul, you know, we read this passage from 1 Corinthians where he's reminding them that, you know, some of you are boasting because you know one teacher, some of you are boasting because you know another. And it's everything's a gift from God.
Totally.
And so that, like, it is the relational, it's the relational level playing field that he's calling them to. And this is like, Corinth was such a mess. I feel great about our church sometimes when I read 1 Corinthians, because, you know, a few chapters later, he's going to talk to them about the way that they're taking communion together, the Lord's Supper. And like the wealthy people are getting, like they're getting drunk off of communion and stuffed on communion. And then the poorer people are walking away without even being able to participate. Mm-hmm. And there's that, this class thing has actually worked its way into so many facets of the church.
Yeah.
And calling to relationship is what he's doing throughout this book, sometimes in a frustrated way.
Fair.
Which I appreciate.
Fairly enough, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of times when I find myself at the table with other people, I don't always really know where I stand as far as by comparison, right? Yeah. Like, I might think, oh, they're doing much better than I am. But sometimes it's actually just by the way that they handle their resources, mm-hmm. their amount of generosity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had friends where we'll go to dinner, or we've had roommates where we'll buy groceries and, oh, I got this time, you get next time, no big deal. We're not keeping tallies, we're not have a ledger to say, oh, well, I paid $5 more this time, so you owe me or whatever, right? And it just makes for a very comfortable relationship, because we know, hey, you know what, it might not be perfectly even, but we got each other.
Yeah.
And there's other friends that are, you know, down to the penny, this is how much I'm going to, you know, write my check for to reimburse you. And it's just that there's a different feel that comes along with that relationship, you know? So
I feel like, and not to detract from your point, but writing a check, you really dated yourself there. So
no, like I literally know people who will do that.
It's still Venmo and Apple Pay, Jen. That's the way that
I use that. People have given me checks. I'm not writing people checks.
She electronically deposits those. Like it's nobody's business.
Well, my husband does that. So
That's true.
So you take that care of that, please.
Totally different direction on ego. You asked about personal experience or like life experience. So I got to take Tony and Andrew, two of my kids, to the Taylor Swift concert a few weeks ago and had an absolutely amazing experience. Loved the whole creativity of that show was amazing, right? From the technical aspects to the truly artistic expressions that were just carefully and thoughtfully done throughout, right? Like, and it's high energy and it's all the things. So I'm at SoFi Stadium. It's night 5 of her tour here in LA. And at one point, she sings a song called Champagne Problems. It's a great song. Judge me later. Sings this song, and the whole stadium erupts. It's about an hour into her 3-hour set. So this is not a natural end point by any means. The whole stadium erupts in what turned out to be like an 8-minute ovation, where literally the show stopped. Like, they couldn't go on. She took her in-ears out, like, had to just stand speechless, more or less, like on stage, wondering at what in the world was going on. And it was a very cool moment to experience, because even as we were experiencing it, I found myself thinking, like, this is one of those moments. Like, this is a historically significant Taylor Swift concert moment. Like, what is even happening? Which was one of the questions she kept asking. We could see her words moving on the screens, like, what is going on, right? So it turns out that it's this 8-minute ovation. She finally, you know, the crowd finally quiets a bit enough, and she puts her, you know, earbuds things back in and is ready to go. And she's saying things that the journalist that captured after, she says, what do I even say to that? She said to the crowd, that was so deeply abnormal and beautiful. I don't know what to do or say. And she went on and she said, I think it's safe to say that I, like all people, this is hilarious. This is Taylor Swift being like, you know me, like you guys. Yeah. Yeah, I'll experience like a certain amount of emotional downward spirals throughout the course of the rest of my life. And in those moments, you can rest assured, I'm going to think about what you just did and I'm going to feel better. So thank you. She said, that was insane. It was crazy. And I mean, she was moved to tears by this whole thing, right? But as an audience member and like with my kids there, I'm watching one of the best performers of our time have this moment of both awe and humility at what she had just experienced. Like the appreciation for her artistry totally on display, yeah. but also her real humanity of like, I'm going to have some downward spirals because yeah. not every day is performing in front of millions at right. SoFi Stadium. Yeah. And when I hit those moments, I'm going to need these moments to help me get back through that, right? I thought that was really profound. I know it's Taylor Swift and whatever, but I really thought that there's a depth to that. Like, yes, we all experience life up and down and whatever, but what are those moments or the truths that we can cherish that help us climb that next mountain, right? Because we're all going to have the valleys. And I just thought it was really cool that she spoke to that. Like, in that moment, like, how do I cherish this in a way that propels me forward?
And isn't that one of the things that makes her so magical is that she's real?
Yeah, the humanity.
She's relatable.
Of that.
Like,
that's
true. Somebody who could sell out gajillions right. of tickets right. of concert after concert is actually still relatable in some way. Like,
but absolutely.
That's why. To have the self awareness to know that her own ego is fragile.
Right.
And that now, right this second, feels amazing.
Yeah.
One day the stadium won't be this full.
Mm-mm. Right.
And there'll be some
Not
other.
Forever.
Yeah. There'll be some other pop star that's filling up stadiums while I'm playing in Branson, Missouri.
And
I need to remember this moment.
Even the wording of her turning it into appreciation for her audience, yeah. the thank you in that, totally. Is also really connected, right? That relationship aspect yeah. again. It's not just I'm up here being a performer doing the amazing things I do, but like as a performer, she couldn't really do what she does without all of us
Absolutely.
Showing up to watch and listen, right?
It's
so
true.
That's a cool piece.
It's also funny to me that LA seemed to connect with champagne problems so well. Like, yeah, we get you.
We got that.
Our problems are champagne problems. Yeah. So last thing then, we kind of ended Sunday by talking about that, hey, the ultimate verdict about you comes from what God says about you and what Jesus was willing to do on the cross for you. So you are valuable. You are important. And while you'll never live up to the expectations of others, and frankly, you'll probably never even live up to your own expectations that you have of yourself, the hope you have isn't found in the approval of others, but it's actually found in what God says about you and what God did for you. So what I'd love to just know then is, how has that encouragement of what Christ does on the cross and who God says you are, how does that help you when you are feeling deflated? You know, you love to achieve. Sometimes you don't, you know? You're great at achieving, but sometimes you don't. You love social interaction, Jen. No one knows who I'm pointing to, by the way. But you mentioned Audrey achieving before. So you love social interaction, but sometimes people, you know, probably give you more of a cold shoulder than you wish they would or whatever. Like, how has your identity in Christ helped you in moments like that?
Yeah, I have to come back to like a moment where I had where I was younger in my college times where I had a very deep valley of feeling like I was very alone. And because I was in a new place, I didn't know any people. I had to decide that, you know what, my constant companion is Jesus. Like, he's yeah. there always. And so spending a lot of time just really pouring into that relationship helped me to realize like, oh yeah, I can have these social connections, and that is uplifting and encouraging right. to me, but it's not the end all be all. Like, that will come and go. Friendships come and go. Family relationships even can come and go, but yeah. Jesus is always there. So he's steadfast.
Yeah,
that's good.
I think for me, recognizing and resting in what Jesus has done gives me the opportunity to surrender in those times when I can't, which is most of them. But so recognizing that I can't, but Jesus can, and figuring out how to live into that and how to be able to be surrendered to what he's asking me to do or empowering me to do. And having just that mental framework is really helpful, right? Because if I think that I have to go after and earn and do and strive, that's exhausting, honestly. And so I'm not real good at like resting, like put your feet up, twiddle your thumbs, eat some bonbons. Like, that's not really my style, but like resting,
I know, right?
But like resting in Jesus, like at the end of the day, have I done my best? And honestly, my best is going to be different than your best or your best, but my relationship with Jesus lets me rest in him in the sense that, like, I'm not really trying to impress or outdo or whatever myself or anybody else. Like, Jesus's gift of love and salvation is mine regardless of whatever I earn. Yeah. And there's just a surrender in that, that, like, I think as a striver, having the mental space to go there, right, to a place of rest and surrender and not having to earn it is a really important part for me, just from a mental health and a spirit health kind of standpoint.
And I think it can go both ways too. They like when you don't hit your goals, you don't achieve, or you feel like you're less than, right? Or you know, we can get distracted by our like life circumstances and take ownership of those in a way that we shouldn't, right? Like it might be like a health diagnosis and now you only see yourself as a sick or broken person or, but it can go the other direction too, right? Where it's like, you're getting a lot of praise from somebody and you can be like, I'm amazing.
Totally.
Look how incredible I am. Yeah, like all that, right? And actually recently I was having a discussion with my daughter because she had gone to bed and a little while later she got up and she was really upset because she was struggling with some fears, some anxieties. And she was super upset and she's kind of spiraling into this like, I'm just a scaredy cat. Like, why am I just scared of everything, you know? And, you know, everything always feels worse at night, right? But she was in one of those moments. Yeah. But, and you know, I was assuring her, like, hey, we all have fears.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, yeah, but I always have this and this and this. And she was really identifying that as herself. And I said, look, this is not your identity. Mm-hmm. You're going through something. Right. It's something you're experiencing right now. But that's not who you are.
That's right. Yeah.
I said, who you are is a greatly loved child of God, period.
Yeah.
And it was one of those like, oh gosh, I needed to hear that myself kind of moments. Like that was like a Holy Spirit took over and like, whoo, let's hear it. But like, but that kind of like jolted her out of that.
Yeah.
And it kind of made her like stop and go, oh, right. Like that fear, that's not who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a thing I'm dealing with.
Totally.
Okay. And it just really released that. And so, but it's easy for us to get in that and get distracted by all the things. Right. And so, that's just a great like place to come back to is like, I'm just greatly loved.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's funny. Interesting that you bring up a kid example. Cause so Andrew is a college runner. He's on a cross country team and he's having this cool experience getting acclimated to a college coach in a new context and all this. But they were sharing that this last week, they were talking about ego mindset versus a task oriented mindset and how an ego oriented mindset. One of the things he said that really stood out to him was that an ego oriented mindset has this mentality where adversity induces anxiety. Like I'm going to worry a lot about the things that are stumbling blocks or that I'm not doing well enough or that are obstacles or whatever, right? But a flip of that mindset is one where adversity induces focus. Like how can I actually take this challenging situation in front of me and just be more thoughtful, more intentional, more disciplined maybe, or even just like what's all you could think of the situation as totally overwhelming or you can focus on one piece of it at a time, right? And again, even applying that then to like our walk with Jesus, like I think there's ways in which life's situations or whatever can feel like they're just way outside of our control. And that can be super anxiety inducing when we're wrapped up in our ego, right? Because that ego thing is going to fuel anxiety. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we can just be maybe looking at those anxieties as an opportunity to, you know, Jesus invites us to cast all your cares on me, right? Like in what way is Jesus walking with us in this situation can be a great way to focus, right? That helps us to overcome maybe those feelings of anxiety. It doesn't necessarily immediately overcome the obstacle, but can we even overcome just the anxiety? Because I think that that ego thing fueling a lot of the anxiety that a lot of us experience can be a total downer, honestly. But there's a kind of way out of that if we can put our focus in Jesus as well.
Well, I think it's a good closing word. And those of you listening, we're going to be doing this each week. And the next movie that we're watching is Ford versus Ferrari. On campus only, we're not able to broadcast these because of all kinds of copyright issues, but you can come on campus and see it. You should watch that movie if you're hearing this before this Sunday. It'd be great to have the context. It's way better than Cars, and you'll probably enjoy it, and we hope to see you here this Sunday. Please know that if you're wrestling with ego or you're feeling deflated or you're feeling like, man, I'm having a really hard time not getting my worth and value from the opinions of others, like please know you're not alone, right? Hopefully you've heard that today. And that this is not a new issue, it's an old issue. And it's something that Paul invites us to give to Jesus and to get our worth and value from what he did for us and what he says about us. Have a great rest of your week. We hope to see you this weekend.